Well, good afternoon. It's the Agriculture Show here on CKMS Radio, 100.3 Sound FM, and you're listening to us on a local community radio station, your best community radio station, and look forward to podcasting this later. So today is episode number 67, and today I have guests from Climate Action Waterloo Region. Have I got that right? And from my left to right is Gertie Diaz and Sarah Brown. Thanks so much for coming out today. Great. We're going to talk a little bit about an interesting initiative here where it's about greenhouse gas emissions. And I think most of our listeners will recognize that, wow, we've had that around for some time. But what has been done and what our guests are going to speak about is how much greenhouse gas emissions and what can we do about here in the Waterloo region. Have I done that justice, ladies?
It's a good start, that's
okay.
For sure.
Can you tell us why don't we start first with what is Climate Action Waterloo Region, and then we'll go into the topic.
Sure. So Climate Action Waterloo Region actually began about 3 years ago. It started as an idea at a course at University of Waterloo, which Gertie happens to teach, actually. Things come full circle like that. But it was based on this question of what would it look like if our community had a common greenhouse gas reduction target? So a target that we could all work towards in each of the different sectors and that we work in and the programs that are happening here. So fast forward 3 years later, and what's been done is three main steps. And the first step is to do what's called a greenhouse gas inventory and forecast, which is to do a best guess calculation of where the emissions come from here locally. And we'll speak in a minute about how that connects to agriculture.
That's great.
And the second and third step we did together, which is to create an action plan that sets out some ideas for how you might reduce emissions and then sets a reduction target. And the one that's been set for Waterloo Region is 6% below 2010 levels by 2020.
Now, is that the same as other standards for Canada or Ontario? The 6% seems to ring a bell, but that's what we're all... Depends who's... They keep fussing around with these things.
Certainly do. So it's a voluntary thing, and this one's been set at the municipal level, so it applies to our community of Waterloo Region. That means the geographical area of Waterloo Region.
Mm-hmm.
And the decision-makers in this case are the municipal council governments. So the plan recently, about a month ago, was unanimously endorsed by the city councils of Cambridge, Kitchener, and Waterloo, as well as regional council.
Yeah, I just saw that. You've seen all seven councils, right? Or did you just...
The four that I just mentioned were our participating partners in this program, which is a program that other communities across Canada participate in as well. And the townships, we've gone to their councils sort of as an information thing.
Yes.
They're a bit smaller, so have a different scope, and they're covered by, they have their mayors on regional council as well that heard about it there.
Yeah, that's good. Wow, and how long has this taken to do all this?
So the idea has been around for just over 3 years, I guess, and then really the last 2.5 have been sort of the roll up our sleeves and do this work. And you asked before about how it connects to the 6% number ringing. Does that ring a bell for other targets that have been set at other levels? So right now, that's a pretty common, for whatever reason, people seem to fall to that level. There's not actually a strong connection, but at the national level, Canada does have a target, I believe, also of 6%, but below some 2006 levels or something like that. And 6% is one that is used at some other communities, but the one that we set here is really based on some numbers that we calculated here, and it just happened to fall in that same range.
Well, that sounds pretty good. We like to play a few songs on our show here from time to time, so we'll ask Gertie to fire up her player here and play us a song. Tell us, what song are you going to play, and why do you like this one?
This song is called Who Have a Dream, and it's by somebody called David Ross McDonald.
Okay.
I heard him live in Guelph. I used to live in Guelph. And he plays finger-style acoustic. He's an independent troubadour. I used to be a geologist before I got into music, so I like his music in general.
Yeah.
And this is it's a long song, so about 6 minutes long, but talks a little bit about winter and all kinds of other things.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Looking forward to that. Okay, let's play that song first. We'll be right back. It's the Agriculture Show, and we'll see you in a short bit. Go ahead.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Goretti Diaz. I'm from the University of Waterloo. You're listening to the Agricultural Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM. The Agriculture Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Waterloo Federation of Agriculture represents the farmer producers in the region of Waterloo. Our goal is to promote the farm community in support of the innovation, hard work, and compassion that is emblematic of the region of Waterloo. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmer with the needs of society.
That's really nice. Thanks so much for doing that.
Well, no problem.
That's great. It's nice to have my guests speak a little bit in their own words. Our motto here at the station. Also, as I said before, we sure like the music you bring. So tell us again, what about that song? Where did that come from? That's an artist you heard at the Guelph Music Festival, right?
Yes, this performer is actually a real independent troubadour, and he originally was from, I believe he lives in Australia. So David Ross MacDonald was a geologist, and his father was a jazz musician, and at some point life didn't go so well, and he stopped being a geologist and decided to pursue his musical roots. So the way he does his concerts is he chooses small venues, mm-hmm. and I heard him playing at somebody's house. There was about 50 of us, and it was a really enjoyable experience.
Sounds pretty nice. Good choice of music. We'll get you to play some more later on, too, if you could. Let's get on to our second segment here of our show. And once again, folks, my guest today on episode number 67 are Goretti Diaz and Sarah Brown. We're talking a little bit about the report on GHG emissions here in the Waterloo region. But first of all, we should get to know our guests a bit more. So, Goretti, you're a teacher at Waterloo University?
Yes, I'm an assistant professor at the University of Waterloo in the Faculty of Environment, mm-hmm. in a special little unit called SEED, which is appropriate for agriculture, but it has very little to do with agriculture. It's the School of Environment, Enterprise, and Development, and mm-hmm. I teach there in the Environment and Business program, and mm-hmm. my background is in agriculture and measuring greenhouse gas emissions.
Mm-hmm. It's funny you should mention that. You know, I'm an alumni of the University of Guelph, and like 20 years ago, no longer than that, what am I thinking? A long time ago, back when Fred Flintstone was around. So University of Guelph was probably the only one that had an environmental or agricultural degree.
That's right.
Now I think you'd be struggling to find a university in Ontario that did not have an environmental department. Does that make sense now? Do you agree with that?
Yes, and I actually went to the University of Guelph as well.
Oh.
I started there in 1988.
Yeehaw.
And it started off as a very agricultural university when I was there.
Yeah.
And within about 5 years, in the early 90s, it really shifted. Mm-hmm. I think agriculture wasn't having as much, people weren't as interested in agriculture, so it started to shift more into the environmental side of things. Mm-hmm. So it became a very strong environmental university, but I think people's awareness of sustainability has really pushed for programs in the environment, and yeah. I think more and more universities are have a good environmental program.
So, like, when did Waterloo get its environmental program?
It's actually the oldest environmental program in Canada.
Oh my goodness!
The Faculty of Environment in the 1950s.
Oh my
gosh!
I'm totally wrong here.
Yes, it is. So Guelph has probably one of the oldest agricultural programs,
yeah.
and shifted into the environment. But University of Waterloo actually, I think, has the oldest environment program in Canada.
My goodness, they were certainly were leaders, and whoever you know with the Waterloo associated with computer science and the like. And that they would, you know, the environmental issues would be kind of less, a little lesser there. So
yeah, you think engineering would be the main thing,
sure.
but we're trying to make environment more important. That's for sure.
As important.
Okay, as important.
So Sarah, how did you find yourself here on a Tuesday afternoon? Tell our guests, how did you end up here talking about the environment?
Sure. Well, I took the bus number 7 to see up from downtown Kitchener, but prior to that. Yeah, my work in this field, I guess, leads back. I actually studied in environment business at UW between 2003-2008.
Mm-hmm.
I got my best life experience growing up on a beef farm outside of in Grey County, Ontario.
Oh boy. That's an honest part of the world.
Right on the Grey Bruce line, actually, between those two counties, and somewhere along the lines developed an interest in environmental issues, and that led me to study at UW. And then I went on to do some work in urban planning, and then somewhere along the line found myself back here in Waterloo region working between two nonprofits called Reap Green Solutions and Sustainable Waterloo Region, and mm-hmm. two of those organizations were partnering with the municipalities on this project. So then it was supposed to be just a small little job for 3 months or something like that at the beginning, but these things tend to snowball or can snowball, and I'm glad that it did. And so I've been doing this now as the project manager for this partnership now for 3 years.
Oh, wow. That's quite a... It all has some interesting stories how we end up talking about these topics here in the afternoon, so I'm glad they mentioned those things. And so you can certainly come well... it's going to be great when we get to that part of the show when we talk about what the report shows about agriculture and some of the recommendations. But I think it'd be great to play one more song again. Gertie, do you have another one you can tune up there? We'll play another song and we'll be back with our third subject shortly. What have you got lined up for us there?
What I have here is a band, I guess a group from the U.S. called Carolina Chocolate Drops.
Oh, good.
They're from North Carolina, Grammy Award winning group. And they do bluegrass, and I have a song called Snowden's Jig, which is actually all instrumental, and it came from their CD called Genuine Negro Jig.
Okay. All right, press the go button. We'll be right back, folks.
Hi, this is Sarah Brown from Climate Action WR. You're listening to the Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM. The Agriculture Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Waterloo Federation of Agriculture represents the farmer producers in the region of Waterloo. Our goal is to promote the farm community in support of the innovation, hard work, and compassion that is emblematic of the region. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmer with the needs of society.
That was fun. Thanks for doing that, Sarah. So, once again, folks, thanks for listening in. It's December 17th, episode number 67. My guests are Gertie Diaz and Sarah Brown. So now we're in our third segment. We've got to know our guests a bit and a little bit about Water Region Climate Action. So tell us, folks, about the report. It's got four sections in it, and we'll eventually get into the agriculture part. But tell us about the report in general, what sectors, and before we talk about the agriculture one.
Sure, I'll do a high-level overview and then maybe let Grady speak to how she was involved. So the report itself is based on, I mentioned before, there's a greenhouse gas inventory that tells us where the emissions come from. So
yeah.
Those five sectors have guided sort of how we've laid the report out into five, what we call focus areas. And those are, in order of magnitude, in terms of where the sources, are transportation, is where most of the emissions come from in this community. So about 40%,
mm-hmm.
and then followed by energy use in workplace buildings. So that's everything from commercial sector to institutions, the schools and hospitals and the government buildings, and at 32%. And then residential buildings, so all the homes we live in here are the next biggest source. The energy use we use there creates greenhouse gas emissions.
Mm-hmm.
And then from agriculture, it's been quantified at 5%. Grady
yes.
will tell you a bit more about where that number comes from in a minute.
Yeah.
And then 1% from waste.
Okay.
Methane from waste.
Yeah. Well, that's good. And so that's a 5% we're looking at today, and that's good news. I'm sure there's some interesting topics in the others. So, Grady, you want to talk a little bit about, I don't know where to start. So you probably identified the sources, and I'll let you speak to them. Why don't you tell us, our listeners, about the 5%.
Okay, well, I'll say a little bit about it. Sarah was actually the one who was involved in the calculations and identifying the sources, but I met Sarah early in the process, and they were actually looking at what they should be including in the agricultural emissions.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the emissions are associated with livestock and manure. That's the main. That's the only thing that's been considered in this at this point in the greenhouse gas inventory. And that there are additional things that could also be considered, including emissions from fertilizers
mm-hmm.
and manure once it's applied to the soil. But at this point, it hasn't been included. And sequestration has not been included. So this is carbon that goes into the soil, that's kept in the soil. Things like sequestration by trees and that on farms has not been included, but that's a very uncertain and difficult thing to measure.
Oh, it's a tough one.
It's a very difficult yeah. one, yes. Very uncertain.
So. Well, we talk about, let's talk about what you were able to determine it and how you did that and some of the mitigation. So tell us first, the sector, the part you identified, how did you develop the number? How did you find it?
Sure. So that relates back to Grady spoke about the first conversation we had. And the question then was whether to include this sector at all. So in the sort of methodology of following that other communities have done, it is an option whether to include emissions from agriculture or not. So at that point, we were thinking about that. And other communities that are a bit more urban focused chose not to. But we thought because Waterloo Region has such a strong rural community here that it would make sense for it to be relevant to us here. So we decided to do what we could, and the numbers that we came up with that were possible at that time to get the data for were, as Grady said, from livestock. So it was straight out from Statistics Canada census
yes.
on number of livestock, and there are some preset what's called emissions factors, which says, for a dairy cow of this maturity, it has an emission factor. It's the methane that's produced from its waste,
yeah.
its manure, creates this much emissions. And so it just went like that all down the different types of livestock, and
yeah.
those add up to that amount.
Okay.
I think that 5% is, because it only represents the livestock, it might seem a bit low, but in reality, if we included some of the emissions due to fertilizer, it might add it up to another 5%. Mm-hmm. In Canada, the greenhouse gas inventory for Canada says that agriculture contributes to about 8% of the entire greenhouse gas emissions in Canada. So mm-hmm. it's around the ballpark, that's for sure. So that's where that number came from.
And some of the what's some of the suggestions? How would you reduce mm-hmm. those? Just to be consistent with the report.
Yeah,
I had a great time. I loved reading the report. It was fine. I'm glad you'll come in and speak to it. But I guess tell us what you think there first. Because I was thinking that where I was, I think as most people, the perception that it seemed to be bigger. But tell us how you did that. So
I'll speak to it being bigger as a topic.
Okay.
And I say that, told you a little bit about where the numbers come from, but then the next step was to sort of take that information out and just ask people what they thought about this, the idea of reducing greenhouse gas emissions in general and what sort of got them excited. And throughout that process of talking to different groups in the community, agriculture and food, we sort of grouped that topic together, was always one of the most popular things that people wanted to talk about.
Yeah,
and I found that really interesting. And even though it quantitatively represents this small, for us, this sort of a smaller piece, that is the thing that people gravitated towards. It was always the largest group if you had a choice of which station to go to. So
isn't
I thought
that
was kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And then in terms of specifically what are the opportunities, how can agriculture contribute to the reduction of emissions? There were some high-level ideas that came out. There hasn't been anything that's sort of far enough along to be a specific next step, but some of the ideas, like Grady started to say, taking advantage of sequestration opportunities, so where there could be some, some things actually are already happening. Marginal lands, farmers are using marginal lands to reforest them or use them for that sort of thing.
Mm.
Do you want to pick up on something more specific? Oh, I should spring like that.
So, yes, carbon sequestration through either planting perennial crops, something like switchgrass or miscanthus is one opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely don't want to be putting that on food land, but at least on the marginal land and buffer strips mm-hmm. and that's an opportunity both for reducing carbon, but also for potentially producing some biofuels, so that's a nice way to reduce some of the greenhouse gas emissions.
Mm-hmm.
There's programs, one of them being the ALICE program, the Alternative Land Use Services program.
I heard that, yeah.
Yeah, they're trying to encourage farmers to use their marginal land or even some of their prime agricultural land and plant things like tall grass prairie for their cattle. Because it's much more resilient, it doesn't. It's not as prone to drought, and mm-hmm. at the same time, it has very deep roots, so it keeps a lot of carbon in the soil, and that's a nice win-win situation where you're not just reducing the carbon emissions, but you're also creating all kinds of other benefits like cleaning water and making it easier for a farmer to withstand shocks such as droughts that are becoming more common.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is good. Boy, it's nice to see agriculture on, and I think it's right to put that in the Waterloo situation because we are very proud here of our urban and rural connections, so I'm sure agriculture has a part to do. So I guess we want a little bit talk about what the next steps might be on this. So it's really a complex, as we point, we first talked, how do you go about determining these numbers? Having said that, where do you think the next steps are in this process? Will there be even more algorithms and some thought put to it? Is there going to be an agricultural specialist on this thing, or how will they?
I'm not part of the actual accounting part. Sarah did that. I think when it comes to agriculture, we need to be concerned about greenhouse gas emissions, but I think we need to be more concerned about a system that's sustainable. And sometimes those two different things, sustainable and greenhouse gas emissions, mm-hmm. are not always in sync when it comes to agriculture. So, for example, if a farmer has cattle and growing it grass-fed beef and doing all kinds of good things in on their farm in terms of shelter belts and pollination and all those other things, they might actually have higher greenhouse gas emissions. And so to me, I think when it comes to agriculture and food and including that in a greenhouse inventory, I think it's important to know where we're at. But it's also very, very hard to reduce. The carbon sequestration has probably got the most potential because it has other benefits as well. But in terms of next steps in calculating the, you know, the fertilizer emissions, for example, I'm not sure where that where that's going to go next. But I'll let Sarah talk about that.
Yeah, sure. So Gertie picks up on a good point, and that and this was some a bit of tension, I guess, throughout this process, that the agriculture sector in particular isn't necessarily one where a reduction is, no matter what, a good thing. It could, like she's saying, there are some more complicated the farm community in general, and then agricultural land offers so many ecosystem services or other services to the community. So so it's a really interesting thing to be a part of. In terms of what happens next in for the project overall or for climate action as an initiative, it turns to, you know, created the plan, but the plan's really just the beginning of what we hope are longer-term conversations. So we're, Gertie was actually part of what we called a task force. We had a task force for each sector, which was people who sort of work in this area that we could bounce some ideas off of and get some initial thoughts on. So for agriculture, Gertie, Steve Martin from Martin's Fruit Farm, Linda LaPelle from her organic farm, and Steph Shiflett, who's from the Grand River Conservation Authority. So people like that who sort of understand the context. So I would see that type of thing continuing, where you have people who work in those areas who you can talk about, okay, what could we do? What's already happening here in sequestration? What are farmers already doing? And where could more be done? And how would that actually work here?
Well, it's good. I mean, this I think the first time I've ever seen it for our region, so it's pretty kind of nice to see that local thing. This is a local community radio station. We'll talk about those things, so that's good work on your part, for sure. So, you got another song that we can play, and then we'll finish up and talk a little on the outro about anything we forgot to talk about so far.
Okay, I'll try to find another one.
Oh, you've got to dig around there and see. I'm sorry, I take it by surprise. Folks, we have a little technical difficulty at the station today, so I'm relying on my guest to provide music today for the time being, anyway. Gertie actually very kindly has a bunch of great songs so far on her phone here, so we're able to tap into those and listen to that. Sarah, what do you like to listen to, by the way, while we wait for a song to come up? What kind of music do you like?
Oh, my gosh. I like all music. There's music I don't like. I love country, which not everybody does.
so that makes
me unique.
So is that me ringing? Is that you? I guess that's me ringing here. Okay. So what we'll do is, how are you doing with that music there?
Oh, it's
So, do you like country music? Do you are you out and about seeing concerts? What's the last concert you went to see?
It was the Mumford & Sons Festival in Simcoe.
Okay.
It was held last fall.
Seem to know that my second guest today, are going to talk about Patty and Mumford on their playlist too, so we'll play some of that stuff.
Cool.
So how are we doing the music there? Got something cooking?
Yeah, I'm going to play something called Cakewalk Into Town. It's a little bit more upbeat than the two previous songs by somebody named Taj Mahal. It's part of an American blues
He's great.
Compilation. Yeah. Oh, you know Taj Mahal. Okay,
yeah.
Great.
Okay.
So I'm going to give this a try.
Press the go button. We'll be right back.
I had the blues so bad one time, it put my face in a permanent frown. Now I'm feeling so much better, I can cakewalk in the town. I woke up this morning feeling so good, you know I lay back down again. Throw your big leg over me, mama, I might not feel this good again. My baby Oh, my baby, I love the way she walk. When the girl gets sleepy, I love the way she baby talk. Now worry done got scarce, honey, all, and work it no got hard. I spend my whole day stealing chicken, mama, from the rich folks' yard. I got the blues so bad one time, it put my face in a permanent frown. You know I'm feeling so much better, I can cakewalk in the town. I want to go on a picnic in the country, mama, all, and stay all day. I don't care if I don't do nothing, just while my time away. I got the blues so bad one time, it put my face in a permanent frown. You know I'm feeling so much better, I can cakewalk in a town.
We're back. It's the Agriculture Show here on CKMS Radio 1.3 Sound FM. It's episode number 67 on December 17th. And my guests are Gertie Dias and Sarah Brown. Wow, we've been covering a lot of stuff here in GHG emissions in the Waterloo region. Just going to do a little wrap up here before we call this episode done. And as it is with most shows, there are lots of conversation while that song was playing. And I had just asked my guests, what's the next steps in this? And Gertie, can you tell us, it's really difficult to make next steps and get you pass along the information to our listeners. That'd be great, your comments about that.
Sure. I've been working in the agriculture sector for about 25 years. And for me, when it comes to agriculture and producing our food, I think the most important thing we can do is to certainly try to reduce greenhouse gas emissions as much as possible. The more important thing, though, is to create food systems that can withstand climate change, droughts, that produce healthy food, that provide farmers with a good income that's fair. And I think if we start thinking about food and how important it is to us more than anything, almost more than anything else, except maybe water and air, that we need to think about what kind of decisions can we make around food and what is grown, and how can we support farmers so that they can do the best job possible in growing food and also protecting the environment.
Mm-hmm. That's well said, and so it's good that. You know, from the perspective of this show, we love it when agriculture comes up into conversation. So it's great, great show to talk about farming in this case, and just good to see it involved in those comprehensive reports with a chance to explain to the public. And there's some pros and cons to this. So, Sarah, anything else on your end of the table there? Do you think?
Summarized it very well. People to where you can find more information about this.
Okay. Please.
We have a website, climateactionwr.ca, so that has the full plan that Jeff's been referring to, this climate action plan, and a bit of detail in there. And then starting next year, we'll be hoping to have some more conversations about the type of thing that Gertie was talking about. How do we capture the importance of the agriculture community and our local food systems, and look at that through a lens of climate change.
Mm-hmm. So, great, good stuff.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. And thanks for the music. That's cool songs. That's pretty nice.
A little bit different, yes.
Okay, folks, thanks for listening in. This is episode number 67, and we'll be back with episode number 68 in a short bit, and stay tuned, and we'll see you then. Bye for now.